What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Dylan LeClaire is the senior market analyst at UTXO Management. He also writes a newsletter with Bitcoin Magazine. In this conversation, we talk about Bitcoin, on-chain metrics. We talk about Bitcoin's price, the market structure, and what to expect in the coming weeks. I really enjoyed this conversation with Dylan, and I hope you do as well. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by FTX US. FTX.us is the safe, regulated way to buy and sell Bitcoin and other digital assets. You can trade crypto with up to 85% lower fees than top competitors. There are no fixed minimum fees, no ACH transaction fees, and no withdrawal fees either. FTX.us is also the only leading exchange that supports both Ethereum and Solana NFTs. Download the FTX app today and use referral code POMP to earn these free crypto on every trade over $10. The more you trade, the more you earn. Go download the FTX app today and use referral code POMP. Today's episode is brought to you by Brave. Brave Wallet is the first secure crypto wallet built natively in a Web3 crypto browser. What's Web3? Web3 is freedom from big tech and Wall Street, more control and better privacy. But there's a weak point in Web3, your crypto wallet. Most wallets are browser extensions, a Web2 technology. That means the same old risks, app spoofing, phishing scams, and theft. Brave Wallet is different. Brave Wallet is the first secure wallet built natively in a Web3 crypto browser. No extension required. With Brave Wallet, you can buy, store, send, and swap assets, manage NFTs, even connect other wallets and dApps, all from the security of the best privacy browser on the market. Whether you're new to crypto or a seasoned pro, it's time to ditch those risky extensions. It's time to switch to Brave Wallet. Download Brave at brave.com/pomp and click the wallet icon to get started. Again, go download Brave at brave.com/pomp and click the wallet icon to get started. Today's episode is brought to you by betonline.ag. Betonline.ag is the top spot for all of your sports betting, casino, and poker needs. It's available on your computer, your tablet, or your mobile device. Betonline accepts Bitcoin and more than a dozen altcoins to make deposits and withdraw your winnings. There are no crypto fees, processing only takes minutes, and transactions are 100% anonymous and secure. Head over to betonline.ag and sign up today to receive a 100% crypto bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code POMP100 to get started. Discover why everyone is saying BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager with crypto for sports, casino games, horse racing, poker, and more. Sign up today at betonline.ag and double your deposit with our exclusive podcast promo code POMP100. Go check them out at betonline.ag. All right, let's get in this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed this one.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, we got Dylan LeClaire coming on. Dylan, my friend, how are you?
What's up, guys? How we doing?
We're doing fantastic. How's life? Everything good? Sentiment check on Twitter, all good?
Yeah, doing great. Not too much has changed in the Bitcoin price action recently, but macro is heating up and it's getting really interesting.
Woo! All right, let's jump into, you got the U.S. 30-year Treasury yields to start with, and it's going just up. Just looks like it's just taking a little rocket ship ride here. What's going on with the 30-year?
Yeah, more bonds talk today. Like I said last week, and I've said it a bunch on Twitter, if you want to understand why Bitcoin's trading like it is, look at equities. And if you want to understand why equities are trading like they are, you have to look at credit. You have to look at the bond market, where everyone's talking about the inflation prints. And really, the biggest impact is in the bond market. So we see the 30-year Treasury, but really the entire Treasury curve bending upwards just today, just before we came on, actually, 30-year Treasury broke above 300 basis points, 3%. And so I think there's a trend, a secular trend, which I show in the next chart of the 10-year and kind of this lower high pattern that we've seen basically for the last four decades. And so it's getting very, very, very close to a lot of these kind of to really a break in trend of this lower high pattern. And there's a whole lot of debt out there that, you know, needs to be rolled over. This is how our monetary system works. And so when yields spike like this, not only is the value of these bonds getting mark to market lower, but at the same time, the financing costs for all of this debt, the hundreds of trillions of dollars of debt in the global economy, is rising rapidly. So there's a lot of interesting stuff happening.
What is the issue with the breaking of the trend? If that occurs, what are the ramifications or impact in your opinion?
Yeah, so I mean, essentially, just to kind of say it again, I think the point needs to be hammered home that all of this debt in the system, all of this money supply, money is debt in the system. Money is created through lending, and it's destroyed through debt default or repayment. And so when debt has to be rolled over, like all debt has to be rolled over, the U.S. government's $30 trillion in debt, and they're consistently running higher and higher deficits. They fund themselves through tax receipts, but increasingly it's through debt, and they were relying in 2020 and 2021 on the Federal Reserve to monetize that debt. The Fed's saying inflation's running high, we got to step out of the market, and now it's entirely up to the market and up to investors to basically to fund the U.S. government, and it's through that Treasury issuance. And so with these yields rising, it's getting a lot more expensive for the Treasury and really everyone else from the corporate world, the individual investors, to say mortgage rates, to finance this debt. And so we're not starting to see the kind of second order implications of this, which is really just kind of a balance sheet crunch. But I think that's to come. And I think that's the biggest story of 2022 so far.
Yeah, it's fascinating to watch this happen. You've got this chart here with gold over global bonds. And again, rising very rapidly. What is this telling you?
Yeah, so why am I talking about gold? Why am I talking about bonds, the Bitcoin analyst? You know, I think really what we see here, this is a multi-decade chart. It's a trend of hard money outperforming soft money, right? We have fiat-denominated bond markets selling off in a rapid fashion. And I have the Vanguard total bond market index in the chart after this that we can show. But essentially, gold, hard money, spent hard money for millennia against fiat-denominated bonds. What's this chart show when we see the trend really breaking a huge decade-long cup and handle pattern? Well, it's showing that hard money is outperforming soft money. And so I also like to look at, say, like Bitcoin versus gold, which is the hardest money against hard money, which is consolidating. But I think this trend, this broad trend of hard money outperforming soft money, and I have later in the chart, we can go over this, but it's USD versus JPY, the Japanese yen. The dollar is almost like the cleanest of the dirty shirts. And so while we see bonds selling off, while we see the dollar really depreciating against real goods and services, we see stuff like gold. And I think eventually, in my opinion, Bitcoin, which is consolidating right now, going to outperform in a big, big way over the coming decade.
When you see Bitcoin over Treasury bond futures, I know you've got this chart here as well. It looks like it's consolidating. So it's not exploding upwards yet. What's your expectation for this?
Yep. So this is a log chart. Important to kind of understand that. It just makes more sense to chart Bitcoin and kind of because of its exponential trends in logarithmic scale. But I think this is the trend that the chart that Wall Street doesn't want you to see. And I think eventually this is going to break out to all-time highs. And it's almost like the battle of Treasury reserve assets. The Treasury market is that world reserve currency. It is the asset that basically all risk is priced off of. And I think the pioneers, the forward-looking individuals and corporations are saying, I think this Bitcoin thing might be the new risk-free rate. It might be the new Treasury reserve asset. And while it is super volatile, this is really kind of, I like to denominate assets in each other. I mean, denominating in USD, obviously, there's signal there because everything's priced off the dollar in the global economy, most everything. But denominating assets in each other, I think, is really telling and kind of shows these big broader trends. So while this does look like pretty similar to the Bitcoin chart alone, bonds have been selling off in a big, big way. And so this is actually outperforming and looks better than just the USD chart.
When you look at the Vanguard Total Bond Market ETF, just down only over the
decade lows.
Over the short term here, what is this telling us?
Yeah, this is just showing that fixed income investors are getting their face ripped off, essentially. And you know, Bitcoiners have been kind of chirping at bond investors. Why would you ever hold bonds through 2020, 2021? And this is why. In an inflationary environment, really fixed income gets absolutely killed. And so, if you bought fixed income, you know, whether it's Vanguard Total Bond Market ETF, Treasuries, etc., and locked yourself at a 1%, 2% yield, not only is inflation just killing your real returns, it's actually negative, but also because of the duration of these instruments, the longer dated the bonds, as yields rise, that the value of those ETFs themselves fall. And so you lock yourself into a low yield, and the principal value of your holdings decline in the meantime. And so fixed income investors, really, I think I saw a really interesting stat this morning. There's 500 or so fixed income bond ETFs that trade on the NASDAQ or in US markets. I think there's only 8 that have a positive year-to-date performance, and they're only like 1-2%. So fixed income across the board, because of these big broad trends, treasury markets selling off in a big way, fixed income across the board is getting murdered. So people will say, you know, Bitcoin's struggling to perform, but the biggest markets in the world, where there's $80-100 trillion of assets, they're getting murdered. And so it's important to kind of keep that in mind when you're looking at these markets.
How about the US dollar currency index? That seems to be pretty telling as well, and kind of fits alongside this exact same thought process.
Yeah, so here's the trend. We have the dollar debasing against real goods and services, but we have most all other currencies. I mean, not everyone, but a lot of the biggest currencies in the world that are depreciating against the dollar. So the dollar is the cleanest of these dirty shirts. So important to note that the dollar is the world reserve currency. And so most investors, you know, there's a ton of capital around the world that's implicitly short dollars. They have dollar denominated liabilities. And so they're selling, whether it's their exports or some central banks are selling their currencies for dollars. Essentially, you know, their dollar denominated liabilities can create this short squeeze. If you look what happened in COVID, at the same time that every asset on the planet sold off, what happened to the DIX, the dollar index? There was a super spike, right? So we're not there yet, but this is kind of indicative of tightening financial conditions. And really, it's showing that weaker fiat currencies, the euro, the yen, are selling off faster than the dollar. And so I think my case and what a lot of other investors in Bitcoin kind of think is that the dollar is failing, but it will be the last fiat to really fail, to collapse. And that sounds somewhat dark, but in essence, all these fiat currencies are weakening and are designed to weaken, are designed to debase. But the dollar is, again, just the strongest of these weak currencies. And because we are in this world reserve currency status. And so if you want to look at like Bitcoin's chart and a lot of these, you know, emerging market currencies or just other currencies, or say like the Japanese yen, or the gold denominated in yen, the chart looks way, way different than it does in dollars. And so as a US centric, you know, investor, it's important to kind of understand that there are other markets and that the dollar, even though it's weakening, a lot of other countries have it a lot worse.
So when we take a look at this this last chart, we have JPY, BOJ, and then the relative fiat decay. And this is just a continuation of what you're describing?
Yeah. So my kind of thesis and what I've kind of repeated on this show for the past quarter, really all of 2022, is that Bitcoin's consolidating. It's in accumulation phase. All of the on-chain metrics that we show didn't go through any today, but all of the on-chain metrics that we show, most of them show the hodlers are stacking. And the free float supply is kind of constraining. Bond market selling off, Bitcoin's correlated with the NASDAQ. These are kind of the big ideas. And my thesis is that eventually the bond market breaks because inflation is at multi-decade highs. And something, you know, whether it's, you know, kind of under the surface, something in the credit markets break in the plumbing of the financial system. And what happens? Because of the lack of tools the Federal Reserve has, right? They've only lifted rates by 25 basis points and they've done a decade of quantitative easing. It ultimately leads to yield curve control. So what are we showing here? We're showing the yen against the dollar. And look at the chart, it's broken multi-decade highs. So why is that? Well, if you look at the last candle, it's kind of wild, right? What happened there? The Bank of Japan implemented yield curve control. They're saying, we're gonna buy these bonds you let it get above this rate, which means if the bonds sell off below a certain level, we're going to buy an unlimited, in theory, amount of them. And so this is two relative fiat currencies. So they're both decaying in real value, but the yen is depreciating rapidly against the dollar. So if you want to do this thought experiment, when the Fed inevitably flips course, and they will, it's a matter of not if, but when, you have an absolutely scarce monetary asset in Bitcoin against a fiat currency that's, you know, in theory, going to be printed ad infinitum to keep the bond market held together. And so that's why holding an absolutely scarce asset in the face of yield curve control and theoretically an unlimited amount of debt monetization is very, very powerful. We're not there yet. And the Fed's still jawboning, saying they're going to tighten. And they somewhat have to. They have that political pressure to do so. But bear none, all kind of roads lead to yield curve control, more debt monetization and credit expansion. This is the end game of the long-term debt cycle. We're living through it. And, you know, the days and weeks go by and it feels like nothing's happening and Bitcoin is doing nothing. But make no mistake about it, hodlers understand this end game. They're quartering the market. And if not when, when not if yield curve control comes, Bitcoin's going to make this yen chart look like a joke.
One of the things I've been thinking a lot about for like the last 24 hours, so, you know, I'll take this with a grain of salt, is recently Mohammed El-Iran, the Align's chief economic advisor and the former CEO of PIMCO, he went on CNBC yesterday and he started talking about the raising of the Federal Reserve's inflation target rate. So right now it's 2%. He started talking about, well, like, what if they raise it to 3%? Which, like, 2 to 3% doesn't sound crazy until you're like, well, that's a 50% increase in the inflation target for the world's, you know, most trusted, largest central bank of the world's largest, most powerful economy in the world. What is the impact of stuff like that? Like, how crazy would that be if that was to occur?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think at the very least, the Fed's credibility, if they had really any left or any smidge of credibility left, is really taken a hit. The repeated line of the inflation is transitory, you know, 2% is our long-term target if it overshoots a little bit. And now inflation's at 8.5% and continuing to accelerate month over month. There's a problem. And the worrisome thing is that really I don't think monetary policy is the correct tool here. There's a constraint on real goods and services. There's a commodities crunch. There's an energies crunch. There's a ton of CapEx underinvestment over the past decade. And so these things aren't going to be resolved easily. Potentially, we're kind of at the crux of this, you know, four-decade-long trend of globalization reversing. And so all of these things are super inflationary. If the U.S. wants to onshore manufacturing, good luck with CPI, you know, averaging at 3% over the next decade. It just doesn't seem too feasible. And so the reality is, and these are, again, we're repeating these big, big, big picture ideas here. There's hundreds of trillions of dollars of assets that are priced off of basically negative real yields. And so there's a problem. There's a big problem. And so every investor on the planet needs to continue to ask themselves, how am I positioned? Is my capital, not just in nominal terms, but in real terms, in purchasing power terms, am I insulated from all this? And I truly believe even at these levels, if you're holding fixed income products, even if you're holding just a lot of equities that are valued off of these negative real yields, are you insulated? And I would say, in my opinion, no, you're not completely insulated. You may be in nominal terms, but in real terms, you're losing purchasing power at a rapid rate. So my position is I hold Bitcoin and I continue to buy Bitcoin every single day. That's unchanged. I'm not marking my position to market every quarter, and any leverage, if there is, on the position is very minimal. So volatility doesn't worry me.
Joe, John, what questions you guys got?
Dylan, when you look at what's happening around the world, we saw that Australia today is announcing that they are going to go ahead and approve a spot ETF that is linked to other spot ETFs. What are your thoughts around how that can affect the market moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I saw Barry Silbert quote retweet Gary Gensler today. I think it is somewhat kind of crazy or asinine that we don't have a spot ETF in the United States. It's definitely has nothing to do with investor protection. And I think it's a matter of, it's a matter of time until we get one. I imagine that Grayscale Trust with 600,000 plus Bitcoin will be converted. How that works in practice is something that I'm not sure of the details, but the floodgates will be open when that happens. There's a whole lot of capital that can't just go buy Bitcoin on Coinbase. The institutionalization of Bitcoin, there was kind of that landmark of 2020 with MicroStrategy as the first publicly traded company, but it's still not too mainstream. It's still very hard for, say, you know, these credit funds, these fixed income funds, maybe pensions, to allocate to Bitcoin itself. You know, they can allocate to publicly traded companies with Bitcoin exposure, but it's still really hard to get exposure to the asset itself. So I think, in terms of Australia's capital markets having access to it, they're expecting, I think I saw $1 billion of inflows. So not too significant, but the expected US equivalent of that would be $100 billion. And so that's significant. We're not there yet, but again, just a matter of when, but not if.
Gotcha.
Joe, what do you got?
Dylan, how do you think about timing for the Bitcoin market in general? We've obviously moved sideways for a period now with some greater uncertainty when it comes to the global economy and interest rates and so forth, and we've moved in line with equities. How long do you think this lasts? And more importantly, what are you looking at when it comes to a breakout?
Yeah, so really my kind of base case is I'm watching more of legacy markets than I ever did in terms of volatility indices. So the VIX, I'm watching credit really closely, and I'm watching, for better or worse, the kind of the positioning of the Fed. They're still in the kind of tightening mode. They haven't even begun to withdraw their, or to kind of taper their balance sheet. And so I think we're in for another kind of quarter or so, maybe longer, of volatility and likely drawdowns in equity indices. And I think it's really a matter of time until we get a Fed pivot. The exact timeline is unknown, but for the Bitcoin investor, I mean, you can set limit orders a little bit lower, likely to fill, maybe not. Personally, I'm very comfortable with continuing my dollar cost averaging strategy. And on a personal level, as well as with the fund I work with, which is just Bitcoin, a Bitcoin denominated alpha fund, the whole goal is to outperform Bitcoin. And so when that time comes where, you know, it's peak fear, maybe we see equity market capitulation, credit market capitulation, something in the kind of the plumbing of the financial system really breaks, we're looking to actually increase our Bitcoin exposure and likely adds, you know, a good amount of leverage. Not there yet, and that's not something I'm advising for the average person. Simply stacking spot Bitcoin to cold storage is more than enough and will definitely insulate you from this kind of debt monetization and monetary expansion that is to come. But yeah, that's what I'm completely comfortable with. I think anybody that's buying Bitcoin today shouldn't be thinking in terms of days, weeks, months, even quarters or years, but just have a really long time horizon. And if you do, you'll do great.
Dylan, my last question for you before we let you go is, if you had to think out over the next, I don't know, 2-3 years, you get to pick one chart to pay attention to understand both the macro economy, but also Bitcoin. What's the one chart that you're like, man, this is the one I would pay attention to? This is the one that I would put the most importance on?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. I mean, I would say, even though we didn't even show it today, just probably the Bitcoin chart itself, price action is definitely important. But if not that, then I would definitely probably choose maybe the VIX or some credit market kind of tool. I really think that these are the tells that the legacy system is in. It's not last days, because again, this sounds like very, very doomer. But in terms of the macroeconomic backdrop, we have to remember that the world's more over-indebted, the US and the world, than it's ever been. Interest rates, maybe not now, but as of a year ago, were lower than they've ever been, especially in real terms. And so really the only way out is for financial repression to continue, meaning inflation higher than yields. And so this is basically every capital allocator's dilemma. And I think, again, I just to continue to repeat myself, I feel like I've been beating the drum on this for over a year now, since I've been doing this job full time, and especially since I've been coming on here. But this is what every capital allocator needs to ask themselves: is how are you going to outpace the financial repression? And my continued response is Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think that so far has proven to be a pretty good strategy. We'll see how it plays out moving forward. But we appreciate every single Tuesday you coming on and educating us. My understanding is that you're going to be gone for a couple of weeks. So what was it, a 3-week no Dylan? We may be lost at sea without you there, buddy.
Yeah, headed to Europe for a few weeks to have some fun, but I will be back.
That just sounds cool. Headed to Europe. Like, I'm just going over here. I'll see y'all later. What's up with the follower account? How are we looking on that? Even when priced down / sideways, account's still growing, right? Ooh, 155.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I like it. All right, where? Oh, there we go. Obviously the newsletter as well. Anyone who wants to go check out Bitcoin Magazine Pro, provides an in-depth look at the Bitcoin market, daily content, etc. I appreciate you, man. Any last words you want to leave the people with?
No, appreciate you guys as well, and we'll catch up in a few weeks.
All right, have fun, stay safe.
Cheers.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed this one. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And if you're looking to try to transition to get a new job in the Bitcoin or crypto industry, we've got you covered. Head over to pompscryptocourse.com. We've developed a curriculum with the top teams across the industry. It's a 3-week intensive training program with over 50 events packed into that 3-week time period. Go to pompscryptocourse.com to learn more. And I'll meet you guys for the next episode.